God made the world and all its wonders for man to explore. And there are countless wonders just outside your front door. Now join natural world photographer and journalist Roger W. Downs as he shares the stories of the people, places, music, and cuisines he has discovered as we explore with RWD.
Hey, welcome on into episode 12 of Explore with RWD. I'm Roger W. Downs, your host, and we're going to be chatting with movie star extra Eric Hurley, who's from Western North Carolina and starred in the movie The Last of the Mohicans. And the reason I want to chat with him is because a good portion of The Last of the Mohicans, which was a huge award-winning film, was shot in the DuPont State Recreational Forest. And Eric's going to talk about the different locations and what happened on set and all of his fond memories of being a part of that. Plus, he'll also talk a little bit about another major motion picture that he was a part of in a minor role, but still a very important one. But before we get to Eric, I want to thank the Lord above for my health and the opportunity to share the stories of the places and people I discover when I go out and explore. And I want to thank him for you as well for taking the time to listen to this podcast. I really do appreciate you too. But Lord, please bless our nation and the world in general as we try to get through this horrific pandemic, which is killing thousands each day. And please be with the families who are losing people that are headed home to be with you. Through Jesus Christ, I pray. Amen. And finally, if you haven't done it yet, follow us on social media at Explore with RWD or visit our website, www.explorewithrwd.com, which will give you other podcasts, blogs, photos, and social media links for you to check out. Now stick around because we're going to be chatting with Eric Hurley next, and he's going to share his experiences from being a part of the motion picture Last of the Mohicans, which was shot in portion in the DuPont State Recreational Forest.
Explore with RWD. We'll be right back after this.
And those are the melodies of Native American Matthew Tunai. Not only is a cultural storyteller for the Cherokee Nation in Cherokee, North Carolina, but also an accomplished and award-winning musician and Baptist minister. So how does Matthew weave his culture, his religion, and talents all together? Well, that is a story you have to hear for yourself in episode 4 of Explore with RWD. Or read about it now at explorewithrwd.com.
Welcome back to Explore with RWD.
Thank you again for continuing to hang out. I really appreciate you. And our guest again is Eric Hurley, who starred in The Last of the Mohicans, which was shot in the DuPont State Recreational Forest. But you also had a pivotal role in another major motion picture, correct, Eric?
That is correct, yes.
So I have to ask this because I know there's been several different movies that have been shot around Western North Carolina. How do you go about landing a role in a movie?
Well, you can either get lucky or unlucky, and I don't know. I still haven't decided to this day which side that I was lucky or unlucky. But there was a placement ad in the local newspaper, and I had long hair. I've had long hair about all my life, and they were looking primarily for Native Americans. And everybody's like, "Oh, you need to try out for that. You got long hair and you look the part." And I'm like, "I'm a bald-headed hippie." You know, I'm serious. I have no hair on the top of my head, but my hair was cleaned down my back. And, you know, so I showed up at the local theater municipality and with a couple of black and white photos. And it was all history from there. I was picked to be an English soldier, and they picked me to actually train for 6 weeks to become a soldier. So I actually got to use this to improve my soldiering skills as an English soldier, I guess you could say.
Well, that's kind of cool. So how was that? I mean, and where did they train you? Did they train you in the DuPont State Recreational Forest, or did they take you somewhere else?
No, we reported to the Asheville Firefighters camp in Asheville, and we had people from all over. I mean, all over. the US and Canada. So we had about 30 people that were signed up to do the military corps, and we had about 30 people signed up to do the Indian corps. And so they went to their respective camps, and we showed up at 7 o'clock every morning, and we started doing exercises, and we ran 6 miles a day. And then the rest of the time was spent marching and firing and trying to do it in order and, you know, in some sort of, you know, British manner of a redcoat.
So that was really like basic training. I mean, seriously, 6 miles a day you were running? That's intense.
It was. So we were being trained by Captain Dale Dye, who was a 22-year Marine veteran, who actually, he did train Marines to, you know, for the United States Marine Corps. And he was in Beirut when the bombings happened in Beirut. And so he had a lot of experience just being a soldier and having to drill and train us and everything. So it was pretty intense, very intense.
Did he yell at you a lot and call you a scumbag or something like that?
Scumbag was a very nice name to be called. It was a lot worse than that, I can promise you.
Oh, wow. So he was like, I mean, totally intense, like military in your face.
Well, that was what he was being paid for. And there was no holds barred on that one.
So now you played soldier number two. So how long was your part in the movie again?
Well, so to give you a little bit more of a background, we started filming, the military corps started filming in June. And so we were the foreground of the background, if that makes any sense. So you got your, you know, your main characters, and then you have us, which was the, you know, the Indian Corps, the military corps, and then you had the background. So we were what was called featured extras because we had good training and we knew how to fall, we knew how to fight, we knew where the cameras were going to be placed and how to make it look good for that. So we started up early on, and just about every red coat scene in the movie, I'm there somewhere. But then my part as soldier number two did not come until almost the very end of the filming, when in the film, it doesn't always take place the way we filmed it. So we didn't always film the first of the film first and the last of the film last. It was all mixed up. And so when you see us enter the canoes on Lake James, that was when I became soldier number two. And from there on until I was killed in the cave shot, that was what I became. That was my soldier number two part.
So did your family watch that in awe and admire you, even though you took a bullet for red coats?
Well, my oldest child was only a year old at the time of the movie. So, most of them, you know, they look at it today as like, yeah, there goes dad rolling around in a cave floor again. So,
So how long did it take to, do all those different scenes?
Well, it depended on the scene. So for instance, the cave scene. So all of the cave scene that you see was done in one shoot, and it was 20 hours long. That was the last day of shooting. Oh, and wow. That was mayhem, let me tell you. So you're talking about, you know, walking up and down that street again and again and again. When we were in the canoes at Lake James, I have never in my life since or before ever canoed so much in my entire life as I did while we were trying to make those shots. And it was, you know, we do it again and again and again. Michael Mann was very stickler about what he wanted, and he was a professional, and he was going to get it or we'd do it again. And so many a nights at the fort, we spent just, you know, hours doing the same scene. And in the movie, it might take about 10 seconds for it to go through, but it took us hours to do it.
Wow. Sounds like most people's jobs, all kinds of effort for a little bit of a return. So where was the cave scene shot at?
The cave scene was actually in a warehouse. If you're driving west on Interstate 40 and you get off on exit 240, you take exit 8 off of 240. It is now, Highland Brewings, I think.
Yeah.
So, that was a warehouse there, and they had a great big drop tank in there from like a fire department drop tank, and they had a couple of 16-inch diameter PVC pipes overhead, and the cave was really cool. I mean, it was man-made, but gosh, it was so realistic. It was very, very cool.
Wow, the magic of Hollywood, right? And here I thought that was shot underneath some waterfall somewhere out in Western North Carolina, and I was going to go out looking for it, but I'm glad you cleared that up. I'd have been looking forever.
Well, actually, we did do some shooting at Bridalveil Falls. You see us walking into Bridalveil Falls. You see us, we actually walked under the waterfall twice, for 2 different scenes, and they just moved the camera placement twice. But then when after you see us moving through Bridalveil, then bam, we're in the cave shot, and that moved to, the Asheville setting.
Well, that's really cool because how they've stitched that all together, of course. So how much shooting did you do in the DuPont State Recreational Forest?
Well, let me see. We had back basically we had a day, if you can believe that. We were loaded up in Asheville and driven down there. They didn't want us to know where exactly it was. Had something to do with the DuPont Corporation, didn't know or didn't want folks to know where the sites were being filmed at. And let me go back and remember now. So maybe there was 2 days that we spent there. I do remember. So we showed up on the first day, went through hair, makeup, wig, and all that stuff, which, we better get there at 4 o'clock in the morning, or it's going to take all, we won't be ready to shoot until noon. And so the first shot that we were doing was with Chingachgook and Uncas and Hawkeye in the lower portion of Triple Falls, basically very near where one of the scenes from The Hunger Games was filmed. And they were just crossing the river. That was it. It was just the three of them. So I'm assuming that they were going to try to use that in the beginning of the film, but I don't think it ever made it. It never sh I can never find it in the film. So if it did, I just didn't find it. But as far as I'm concerned, it didn't make it. And then we moved up to Triple Falls on the second tier of Triple Falls, where we got into, well, let's see. They were walking. You see them walking from on camera from left to right across the screen, and then you see them climbing up a little rock wall. And there's kind of a little funny story about that. There are handholds in that rock wall, and if you look really closely at Madeline Stowe, she fumbles trying to find those little handholds in there that they had drilled in the rock. And then after she gets up, the next scene you see is Uncas looking down from the top of the falls, looking at Alice, who is looking up. And I think that was supposed to be their first fall in love scene. So.
Right. Yeah, because I remember when I've seen that scene, and I remember watching The Last of the Mohicans after I had discovered it had been shot in the DuPont State Recreational Forest, because I've been there multiple times. And so I watched it and went, oh, that's Triple Falls.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I know exactly where that's at. I didn't know the part about her fumbling around trying to find her handhold. I'll have to watch that again. And I remember watching The Hunger Games and Katniss, and then I can't remember the love interest in the movie, but she finds him hiding out like on the second tier of Triple Falls too.
It's actually at the bottom. It's actually on the very
Is it?
bottom tier.
Okay. See, I was wrong. All right.
Yeah.
Well, it's still kind of cool though. It all happened right there.
Yeah, absolutely.
Now, did they pick Triple Falls because it was easy to access, or just because of how beautiful that waterfall is? I mean, did they ever share that with you?
No, they ain't gonna tell us peons stuff like that. They're not gonna share anything like that with us. No, but I mean, obviously, when you look at the movie, again, Michael Mann, he was very stickler on perfection. So, it made a good movie, for sure. And then after we got through with that, we moved up to Bridalveil Falls, where we did the scene where he asks Major Hayward asks Hawkeye, how is it that you're heading west when there's a war going on? And he said, and Hawkeye says, well, we face to the north, and all of a sudden, like turn left. And that was on the veil of Bridal Veil. But then, you know, when we enter the cave scene, that was up at the head of the veil.
Right. Yeah. I'm familiar with that. I remember watching guys go in. I'm like, well, that's Bridal Veil Falls.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I knew that because I've been all over those waterfalls too, because I do a lot of wildlife and nature photography. So yeah. I find myself, you know, going to waterfalls a lot. They just really speak to me for lack of
absolutely.
But they're beautiful. So where was the rest of the movie shot then? At least the portions that you were in.
Well, hang on just a minute. One other place was on High Falls. So you see the you see our heroes, and if I'm trying to put it in place of the movie, so the women have been captured and they're trying to, you know, they're trying to race to the Indian camp to rescue the women. You actually see them running up High Falls, the very side. If you're standing at the picnic area looking at High Falls, it will be to the far left. There's a huge rock at the top, and the camera was set up on that rock. Oh. And it was very dry at the time, so there wasn't a lot of water that was coming off of High Falls at that time. But you'll see those three guys trying to run up that thing. And if you've ever been there and experienced High Falls, running up, what the heck are you talking about? So, you know.
Well, yeah, I was going to say that I'd imagine that would have been probably – pretty rough, I would think, trying to run up High Falls. I've been down there when the water's been pouring down, and I'm thinking, yeah, I'm not. There's right. no way. But they did really pick a beautiful area to shoot that movie in. And I know some of it was shot at Chimney Rock too, wasn't it?
Oh yeah. So the Indian camp was set up at Chimney Rock, and it was set up on the opposite side of Chimney Rock. So that when the chief was being spoken to, you could see Hickory Nut Falls over his shoulder. But then when the when the chase scenes began and the fight scenes began, and even the killing of Magua, all of that took place in Chimney Rock Park. And Magua actually he's killed at the very top of Hickory Nut Falls.
Yeah, I kind of figured that when I watched that, I'm like, I think I've been there.
Yeah, but less all the barriers. Obviously, all the barriers were taken down. So
right.
But really cool.
Yeah, I've been up there a couple times. I didn't, of course, didn't get down as close as they were, but I was looking at that going, man, that looks so familiar. And I couldn't place it. I knew it was somewhere in Chimney Rock, and I assumed it was the top of the falls, but I wasn't sure.
Right.
No, but so it must have been pretty exciting though when they finally picked you, I'd imagine, because I would think there was probably a lot of folks who tried out for that movie.
Yeah, you know, you get the idea of thinking, oh man, I'm going to be in a movie. And then you show up and you get dressed and you wait and you wait and you wait. And, you know, there's very little glory in being in a movie, I promise you. It's just, you know, it was exciting. I was 24 years old. I was in the best shape of my life. Of course, I was running, you know, 6 miles a day.
Right.
And, you know, it was very cool, but it was early mornings. It was late nights. A lot of times, you know, we might be in uniform and we decide, you know, we're going to take a nap while we're waiting on everything because we didn't sleep last night. So you're in a wool uniform, it's pouring down rain, and you're laying in the woods sleeping. And, you know, it was, the glory really went out the window in times like that. And then of course, you know, it was in the middle of summer. So, you know, we're getting these 98 degree days and we're in this wool suit. But what was so amazing was once you sweated that suit full, it kept you cool, believe it or not.
Oh, I believe you. And that is why folks from centuries ago in the United Kingdom and around the world, as a matter of fact, loved wool, because it kept you warm in the winter and cool in the summer once you sweated your suit. Although I'd imagine it'd make you pretty smelly at the end of the day. But Eric, you also had a major part in a Mel Gibson flick. And I want to talk about that coming up.
Don't wander off now. Explore with RWD will be right back after this.
Hey, it's RWD here again, and when I'm out exploring new areas, I always take my camera along with me because I'm also a nature and wildlife photographer. And you can see some of that imagery at explorewithrwd.com, but more importantly, I want you to experience it the best I can provide it to you. And that's why I usually grab video of waterfalls, forests, and any place that can help you just reconnect with nature through either your cell phone, your laptop, your tablet, or even your computer. You can find my YouTube channel at explorewithrwd.com.
That wasn't too bad now, was it? Welcome back to Explore with RWD.
Hey, I want to take a second and just thank you again for listening with the Explore with RWD podcast. Please follow us online on social media at Explore with RWD or check us out at our website, explorewithrwd.com. And our guest again is Eric Hurley, who starred in the movie The Last of the Mohicans and also played a pivotal role in a Mel Gibson flick. We're going to talk about that coming up. But Eric, what was your favorite part of being in The Last of the Mohicans?
I don't know. There's a lot of them. You know, we had, so, you know, there was a lot of downtime. We're waiting on the camera crew or the producer or the director to do their things. And we had a lot of downtime. And, you know, the 30 of us military corps, not, you know, as well as the Indian Corps, we had a huge, strong bond. So in the downtimes, like at the fort, for instance, we would grab these styrofoam, or sometimes they were volleyball painted cannonballs, and we would play football. Or, you know, we would, we had one guy, he was in the military corps as well. We called him Peaches, and he was a former wrestler. So he's all the time showing us wrestling moves, and we're out there trying to throw each other around. You know, the most memorable times, I guess, would have to be during the downtimes more so than the filming. Now, you know, don't get me wrong, during that 20-hour filming of the last day when we were in the cave scene, I got to really get very close to Madeline Stowe, Jody May, Eric Schwag, Daniel Day-Lewis, and I'm trying to think the major's name. I'm leaving a blank for some reason. But anyway, you know, we had downtime there too. So, you know, it was really nice to find out that these people are human. You know, they're not this Superman or Superwoman person that you think of when you look at these movie stars. They're down to earth, you know, and they're really, really nice people. Daniel Day-Lewis was one of the best people that I ever got to work with. And, excuse me. And Wes Studi, oh my gosh, Wes Studi needs to be a comedian. He is absolutely, hands down, one of the funniest people to play some of the meanest people on film. He is just, his heart is good as gold, and he is so funny. And he doesn't forget about you, too. I mean, you know, I met him years later after the movie was completed, and he remembered me. I met Eric Schwag later, and he remembered me. So these people, you know, it's not like, you know, sometimes you think they just meet these people and you're just nothing. You're dust on their shirt coats. No, they remember you. They are human as well.
People are just people. And not that you shouldn't be impressed with their acting ability, of course. I mean, that is a God-given talent. And I'm so glad that they're there to entertain us, because I love a good movie. And I don't know about you, but man, movies are some of my favorite ways just to unwind. And I love a good story. And I love The Last of the Mohicans. What an amazing movie that was.
I still to this day cannot watch it and follow the storyline.
Oh, really?
I'm thinking how hot it was, or it rained that day, or, you know, I had a blasting cap go off in my face. There's, you know, there's just all the time something, and I really have a hard, I mean, I've watched it 100,000 times. I've watched it with laser pointers and explaining what's going on, you know, in each of these scenes, but I cannot sit down to this day and really get into the storyline. you know, being in the film just ruined it for me, I guess. But I mean, hey, it was an experience of a lifetime.
Oh, no doubt. I'm sure it probably was. But I do have to ask, you had a blasting cap go off in your face. How badly hurt did you get when that happened?
Oh, I was using it as an example. I'm sorry.
Okay.
No, I didn't. I mean, yes, we got burned a couple of times, you know, from different explosions. But no, we didn't have, I mean, the worst thing, I guess, that we really have is when we were firing, we were, if you can imagine taking your hand and putting it on your hip and you got your elbow sticking straight out. Mm-hmm. And so your elbow is touching the man beside of you. Okay. And you're lined up and you all fire at the same time. So all of that, that black powder that comes off of the guy standing to my left is going to hit me in the face.
Oh, wow.
So, you know, that is probably, you know, and we would end up with small burns on our face and so forth. But, you know, listen to the historians, and we had a lot of reenactors that were historians, and they talked about, you know, yes, we, you would not be surprised at how many, portraits of former British soldiers that they may have, you know, have painted in past, and one side of their face just be all mauled up because they had been hit in the face with black powder their half their life, you know?
Wow.
So yeah, it was pretty intense.
So let's find out a little bit more about Eric Hurley. What do you do now?
I'm a teacher. I teach construction and sustainability at AB Tech Community College in Asheville. I've been there for about 5 years. And before that, I taught at Western Piedmont Community College in Morganton for about 20 years. So I've been in construction most of my life, and I suffer from arthritis, so I have to teach rather than build. So that's the way it goes now.
Well, I mean, I think sometimes God puts you in the role he wants you in, you know?
Yep, absolutely. Well, because of that, I have 7 kids, and now I'm not, before you think, holy mackerel, your poor wife. No, we have adopted I have 3 biological children, and then I have 3 bonus children, and then I have a stepson as well.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with big families. I have 4 biological children myself and 2 stepkids, and I love them all equally. But Eric, let's talk a little bit more about your movie career, because you were involved in a big old blockbuster motion picture, right?
I did. I worked on The Patriot with Mel Gibson. Now, after Last of the Mohicans, The Patriot came to Rock Hill, South Carolina, and my oldest daughter decided she wanted to try out for it. So we took off and went down there, and I applied with her. Well, I got on and she didn't. Bless her heart. I felt so bad. Well, they didn't want me to act. They wanted me to teach because, so the military advisor for that movie, and I don't recall of his name, he knew of Captain Dale Dye. And of course they didn't get along too well, but he knew that Captain Dale Dye probably trained the heck out of us. And he did. So I, in turn, trained all of the redcoats in The Patriot.
Oh, wow. Really?
Yeah.
That's pretty.
I don't get any credit for that. I was just basically an assistant to the assistant to the assistant to the assistant. So
did they find like extras from the area, or did they bring a lot of people in with them?
They had some reenactors as well as locals. They had lots of locals being from Rock Hill, not South Hill, Rock Hill, South Carolina. You know, the population was more there than there was around Asheville and such. So, you know, they pulled in from Charlotte and Gastonia. So they had a lot of extras in there. Yeah.
Well, that was another great movie. Were you, did you get to be on set while they were shooting it as well?
I did. I worked some on set. Yeah. But I just, being through Last of the Mohicans, I had a family then. I had 6 kids at the time when, I just had one in 98, so, you know, he was still young, and I did not want to stay away from home very long, so I had to get back to my kids at that time.
No, and I don't blame it. I'm sure your wife's like, no.
Yeah.
You're not leaving me here at the house with 6 or 7 babies or whatever it may be, and you're going to be taken off. No.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, that's still pretty cool. Did you get to meet Mel Gibson at all? Or
I did, yeah. Mel Gibson, Heath Ledger, and Jason Isaacs are the 3 that I remember the most. You know, now going back and looking at the movie, I did meet a lot of the other people. I just didn't know who they were.
Right.
But, at the time, I really didn't even know who Heath Ledger was. And somebody pointed it out to me. I was like, oh, okay, he's just a kid, you know, and didn't think much of it. And then later, you know, I'm thinking, wow, I met Heath Ledger.
Yeah, well, that was one of his very beginning roles where he actually kind of shot into stardom. I thought he did really well in that
He
movie.
did. He did. And he was, and don't get me wrong, he was more serious about acting than Mel Gibson ever was, I guess. The whole time that Mel Gibson was there, he had his kids and his wife, I think, at the time with him. If he wasn't shooting, he was clowning around with his kids. If you've seen, what were those movies that hit Lethal Weapon? If you've seen Lethal Weapon, you've seen Mel Gibson in real life. He is a big clown. He's full of energy. But then you got over here Heath Ledger, who is like, you know, nose to the grindstone, serious, so
Yeah.
serious.
And that might have unfortunately what led to Heath Ledger's demise. I know he got into character for the Joker and then things just went really dark for him after that.
It would be hard to walk on set and just put that mask on and become that person without, you know, rehearsing it quite a bit. You know, it's some of these parts that these guys do that they take on. It's hard to just, okay, hey man, yeah, cool. Give me a call later. We'll get together. We'll have, okay, now I'm back in, you know, it's just,
Right.
it's hard to flip that coin and become another person.
You just sit back and go, wow, what a diverse actor he was. And sadly, I think it took a toll on him. And Mel Gibson, and I've heard that before, is that if you've watched any of those movies, oh goodness, now I've forgotten the name of them again.
Lethal Weapon.
Lethal Weapon. If you watch any Lethal Weapon movies, he is like that in person. So it wasn't too much of a stretch for him to play that role. So I want to thank you for joining us, Eric. And I mean, really amazing, amazing stories you have. But if I wanted to get a little bit of advice from you for anybody who is an aspiring actor or wants to even go and be, let's say, a stand-in in a movie, what would you suggest they do? Is there anything they need to prep themselves to do? Because I know there's some movies that come into this area, and I'm sure after COVID-19 resolves, we'll probably have some more come through. What would you suggest being a guy who's one, trained people in a movie, and two, also had a role?
Well, one of the things that out of all of the major actors that I got to meet through both of those films, one of the things is a lot of them support their local theaters. If you want to, and it's all luck. I mean, you can ask some of these people that go to New York, they work on Broadway. They've worked and expired all of their life and their money and everything trying to become, and they never do. And it You just got to be at the right place at the wrong time, and get hit by the anvil as the coyote would do for it to work, you know. And so my biggest thing is, if you want to act, look to your local companies. Get into to local acting. Hickory Community Theater here. The Comma has some stuff, and I'm sure Asheville and Brevard and Hendersonville, they all have nice local theaters, and it gives you a chance to rub elbows with experienced actors and get you an idea of what it means to, well, as put on a different mask, I guess you could say. Master of disguise. I always remember in the movie Master of Disguise, he always kept saying, become a different person. They become a different person. Become a different person. And so you have a chance in a local theater to put on somebody else's shoes and try to become that person and, fulfill it. Now, if you're in the lighting or, editing or sound or anything like that, as you know, Roger, you just got to get out there and you got to work the local radio stations and stuff to get there, and work your way up. It doesn't always happen overnight, and luck has a lot to do with it. I've seen a lot of people that I thought were very nice that would throw you under the truck in a heartbeat if they felt like that they could get close to an actor to get a better part. And it's really sad that there's people like that. But, if you keep a good heart in your chest and, just try, do your best, give it all you've got. And at the end of the day, that's the best you can give.
Well, true. And I can tell you this coming from radio. It also has a lot to do with who you know, not what you know.
Exactly. Yes.
But that doesn't mean you should throw somebody else underneath the bus. Anytime I saw somebody do that who was trying to get, let's say, a position at a radio station I ran, I would immediately be like, no, I don't need you. Because what comes to mind is that you will go out of your way to do the same thing to me if you think you can benefit from it.
That's exactly right.
I wouldn't want somebody like you on staff. But if you're friendly with people and jovial and Aunt Johnny on the spot, and the other thing that we always used to say in the industry is never say no.
Yeah.
So if somebody says, hey, can you do this role or can you do a part-time position? Like I used to ask people on a weekend and they go, well, no, I can't do that. I go, okay, well, then you're not that hungry then.
Yeah, right.
And I know it's not horrible, but it is the truth. You want somebody who's hungry for the job because, you know, then they're going to be dedicated to it.
Well, it'd be kind of like you're going in for heart surgery and the doctor says, you know what? I think I'm going to go. Why don't you do this? I'm going to go play a game of golf. You know, you want that doctor that's going to be serious about it. And that's pretty much about anything, you know, in construction business. I thought the same thing. You know, I need people there at, you know, 7 o'clock in the morning and I need them to stay there till 5 o'clock in the afternoon. And we may have quit at 3:30, but you know, you got to give your all if you're going to make it happen for sure.
Well, as we start to wrap up this podcast, Eric, is there anything else that you want to talk about or something that our listeners should know about?
If I could say one thing about DuPont, when folks go out there, remember to try to follow the rules. I take my students there. And when you're walking up and down the trails and you're seeing stairways and trash cans and the visitor center, those are my students that done that. And it really kind of breaks my heart to see people go up there and misuse the place. And there's a lot of people that go up there, and this forest can only take so much abuse before it's finally just going to fall apart. And so if we have a chance to give something to our grandchildren, by all means, help take care of the forest. Give some time, give some money, help out DuPont or any other forest or park that is near you. Absolutely support your parks and forests.
Amen to that, Eric. Amen to that. Because I can't tell how many times I've walked into a waterfall or I've walked down a trail and somebody's trashed it or left their junk. And I always try to carry stuff out of, even if it's not mine, I try to carry it out because.
Pack it in, pack it out. Or if you didn't pack it in and you find it, pack it out.
Yeah, I've started taking plastic bags with me because I can't tell how many times I've found like old dirty diapers.
Oh my gosh. That just, ugh.
So I throw it in the plastic bag and I carry it out with me because I'm like, okay, look, if you're going to take a child with you, which is great, I encourage that. But if they're wearing diapers, please take something to toss the diaper in. Don't just throw it in the woods. They don't biodegrade.
No. So, and that person that is, you know, that's working, trying to make the trail and the forest better for you to walk down is the person that's going to have to pick that up and take it out of there. So. That's not global at all. So, of course, that would be another whole podcast, I'm sure.
Oh, yeah. And I talk about that almost every one of my podcasts. Please, if you're going out to the forest or any other park, I don't care if it's a city park, don't trash it.
Yeah.
Don't be that person. Please don't be that person. And if you see something that maybe a kid left behind, because I've seen some stuff where kids leave, like, even fishing rods.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll grab that fishing rod and I take it back to wherever my truck's at, throw it in the back, and then it goes in the recycling, or I drop it off at Goodwill if it's in good condition.
Yeah.
But I don't leave it out in the forest. Just don't trash
it. No.
Don't trash it. And by the way, thank you for building all those really cool places in the DuPont State Forest.
I enjoy it. I love getting my students out there. They get out of the classroom. Of course, we haven't been able to do it because of COVID twice. Mm-hmm. We've been going almost every semester since 2006, and I've it's just broken my heart these past two semesters that we haven't been out there. My students love this. They get out. We take the whole weekend. We go up on a Friday and we stay till Sunday. We camp out. They serve us food. We do the work. They give us they love us to death. And my students can learn more in a weekend at DuPont State Forest than I think they could sometimes in an entire semester at AB Tech.
So did you guys build a pavilion that's there above Triple Falls?
Above Triple Falls. Oh, the picnic shelter. Yeah.
Wow, that's a really good picnic shelter. I can't tell how many times I've gone in there and been like, "Ooh, I'm just going to sit here and chill out after I hike up that hill."
Yeah, all of the picnic shelters were either built by myself, my students, or Frank Cabrera, who used to be the head maintenance person there.
Mm-hmm. Well, I appreciate all of those because I can't tell how many times I've hiked in with about 50 pounds worth of camera equipment on my back, and by the time I get to the top of a hill, I'm kind of like, "Okay, I got to sit down."
Yeah. Well, if you go down to Triple Falls, those 112 steps, you can cuss me every way up and down both, because that was, I had 18 students show up, and we put that together in 3 days.
Really?
I am so proud of my students for that one, for sure. I'm proud of all my students, but the dock at Fawn Lake, the gazebo at Fawn Lake, the docks on Imaging, Lake Dense, the one at Alford, gosh, I can't, you know, and all of the stuff around the visitor center, both porches on the visitor center. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, all of that was just student built from community college. So there's another one. If you want to support something else, support your local community college.
Amen to that. That is so cool, Eric. I didn't know that. I didn't know you built all those different shelters and docks, and wow.
Yep.
That's really cool. That is absolutely cool. Man, there's a lot to you, sir.
Just, shh, don't tell my wife.
I think she might know already.
Well, my wife is deaf, and I love her to death. And she's just, you know, if I'm walking around and she's, "God, somebody else knows you. What the heck? Come on."
Well, you know, I mean, you were in a movie. I mean, come on.
Yeah, you know, hey, you know, I guess between that and being a teacher, you know, even today we were helping my wife's aunt move, and she's like, "Can I take you anywhere without you knowing somebody?" And I'm like, not much.
No, you're a popular guy. Well, Eric, I appreciate your time. Again, Eric Hurley, where can people get in touch with you if they want to help out with maybe one of those projects or donate to maybe some of the classes? Is there any way they can do that and get involved?
Sure. Yeah, you can get in touch with me at AB Tech. My email is ehurley@abtech.edu.
Okay, because I know people do want to donate to causes like that and also help out because they love the forest.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, perfect, sir. Thank you.
Roger, thank you so much. And if we can do this again, I'd love to do it.
Well, sure. I would love to talk with you again about all the different projects you have going on in the DuPont State Forest. I think that would be awesome.
Excellent. Sounds great.
Explore with RWD. We'll be right back after this.
The dream of home ownership in the early 1900s for most African Americans was a pipe dream. Except in one timber town in western North Carolina, Corey Valancourt.
You know, the American dream is about ownership. It's about being able to control your own destiny, whether that's the house you live in or the land that you farm. And what Oates told me was both of his grandfathers, they had kind of a leg up on other African Americans and on some poor whites, where they had learned to trade. They had been able to save money. And so when his grandparents returned to the towns here of Western North Carolina, Waynesville and Canton, they bought property.
Hear that complete story from Smoky Mountain News staff writer Corey Valancourt in episode 6 of Explore with RWD.
Welcome back to Explore with RWD.
Again, I want to thank Eric Hurley for taking the time to share his stories about being a part of the motion picture Last of the Mohicans, which was shot in part in the DuPont State Recreational Forest and also Chimney Rock. And I'd also ask that you please follow his request of whatever you take in, please take out. And even if you find something that you didn't take in, take it out of the forest anyways. We all need to be good stewards of the land. And speaking of which, next week, we're going to be talking waterfalls and how you can help to conserve them and keep them pristine. That's in episode 13 next week with Explore with RWD. And finally, if no one else has told you this yet today, I love you, and I know the good Lord above loves you. He has promised you that, so make sure to count your blessings, because even in these really challenging times, you are surrounded by the Lord's love, and he's always working on trying to make your life better. And no matter what you've done, no matter what your sin, if you ask for forgiveness, He will forgive you and separate you from it like the East is from the West. So until next time, peace, love, and coon dogs, y'all.
Thank you for listening. Visit us online at explorewithrwd.com to discover more about Roger, his photography, podcast, and adventures. Or follow us on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok at explorewithrwd. Remember, we didn't inherit the earth from our parents. We borrow it from our children. May God bless you and yours. Now get outside and go explore. Explore with RWD is produced by Downs Media Incorporated. All rights reserved.